Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 73 for the 27th of February 2010. And it's Mardi Gras Day.
Woohoo!
For those who don't live in Australia, we have once a year here in Sydney the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, and it completely shuts down our city.
I am what I am, etc.
And in case you were wondering, that is not Josh Philpott.
No, I was about to say, I'm going to introduce Dave first here. By the way, first of all, I'm David McVeigh, and I'm your host for the day, as I am usually every week, hopefully. And I am joined in studio by Dave Kazicki. How are you, Dave?
I'm a little scared. I'm a little on edge. One, you stole my thunder with the can opening, which I couldn't resist.
Sorry.
and also, this is the first podcast I've ever done without Josh. And I'm feeling like, you know, the captain without Tennille. BJ without the bear. I don't know. I can't think. Starsky
really?
Without Hutch.
Really?
I don't know.
Have you never done a podcast?
I've never
Josh?
Done a podcast without Josh. So this is This is a new, interesting experience for me.
Spread your wings, let them dry.
Actually, because I write for Penthouse, we usually say spread your legs.
Oh, okay, thank you. All right, we're also joined after a very long hiatus, Miss Katrina Smith.
Hello.
Are you?
I'm excellent.
That's good. And for those who don't know who Katrina is or haven't been listening that long, Katrina is an actress, a stand-up comedian, a songwriter, a performer, and a medical professional. So
I'm an allied health professional, yes.
And you need to get a bit closer to your microphone.
And I've got to get the gloves in. You've been telling me to bring in the rubber gloves so I can snap them when I make a declaration. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ben Straw, you need to get a whole lot closer to your microphone, actually. Ben Straw actually said that he felt like when listening to Katrina, Ben Straw from Ben's Tech Show said that he felt that she should be wearing rubber gloves when she does the show.
I don't want Sully.
That because I've always got a feeling that she's going to sit there and ask us to bend over and cough if we say something that she doesn't like.
No.
Okay. You'll hear us talking throughout the show to our chat room, and you'll hear us talking about wrong camera and so forth, and that is because we do go out live. Now, we are supposed to go out live at 12 p.m. on Saturdays, but we call it 12 p.m.-ish because without fail, we are always running late. Today is 12:40. Part of that was a Mardi Gras issue, and part of that was the fact that for some reason our bandwidth died, and I don't know what was going on there. But we're here now, and we're going, so we're going to get this thing moving. If you do want to watch us live, go to geekactually.com/live, 12 p.m.-ish on Saturdays. Now, on this week, we are kind of cutting television down to a small section. We have a television story, but because we've got a lot of film news and a lot of geeky film news. Let's face it, Dave and I are kind of salivating over some of this news because there's a lot of comic book related movie news in particular, and that always gets us talking.
I think we might have to make up one day by doing a because I think it's out this week, Generation Kill's out on Blu-ray, and I think we really should discuss this thing one
yeah,
of
these
I need
weeks. To catch up and watch that. I need to, what is it, eight episodes?
Seven episodes. It's one of the best adaptations of a book I've seen about the Gulf War. And it is funny, it is messed up, and sorry to cut you off.
That's fine. Okay, so we will plan to do a Generation Kill review once David has gotten off his ass.
I'll have the Blu-ray this week so I can lend it to you.
I've got them. I just...
Same pile?
Sorry?
The same pile of stuff? Yeah.
Same pile. Sorry, for those of you who don't know or are just joining us...
Apparently Dave has piles.
I have a large pile of movies and television shows that... I collect and don't always get to watching. So Dave often says, "You need to see this." It's like, "Yeah, I've got it downstairs. I'll get to it." So, yes, I will get to those. We are also going to review the new Luc Besson-produced action film From Paris with Love with Mr. John Travolta. I think we're going to have an interesting review because I think we've got two conflicting viewpoints on that. So I think Dave and I are on side this time.
It is a first.
It is a rarity. But anyway, we will come back to that. First of all, let's talk a little bit about television. And I just got to say, I don't know much about the show, and I haven't read the guy's Twitter post, but I just love the concept of this. Apparently, there is a man named Justin Halpern who has a very popular Twitter account called "Shit My Father Says." Shit My Dad Says is what this, and he every day puts up one comment, which is something that his father has said to him, and they are apparently riotously funny. And
I'm part of it. It's like a viral thing that starts, and one of your mates will ring you up and just go, "Did you read this shit?"
I've got to follow this guy.
Then it just gets thrown on, and it is just mental.
Well, back in November, CBS had optioned it and basically had said that they were thinking about doing a TV series out of this, and the whole world kind of shuddered a little bit. It's like, really, you're going to make a TV series based on a Twitter account? This is kind of odd. Well, things have moved on since then, and now I'm actually quite excited because the Will and Grace creators... Freudian slip. Will and Grace creators, David Cohen and Max Muchnick, are preparing and developing the television version of this, and they have cast William Shatner as the dad.
Denny Crane.
And I just think that that's wonderful. And they're saying that they probably will be retitling the show, though, because it is network TV, to either Stuff My Dad Says or Things My Dad Says.
Excrement? Or feces?
No.
The correct terminology?
No. Apparently they're going away from the poop altogether. What do we think about this? Do we think that a Twitter account can sustain...
Excuse me. In your own words, listening to previous shows, you said they're making a movie about the Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, it's called Real Steel.
Yeah, I know. So if you can do that about a toy, why can't you do it about...
Well, absolutely. No, I didn't say you couldn't do it. I just said, was it a good idea?
True.
Here you go. I've actually got his Twitter account up at the moment.
Oh, can you give us a couple of juicy ones?
A parent is only as good as their dumbest kid. If one wins a Nobel Prize and the other one gets robbed by a hooker, you failed.
Yeah, I can buy that. Yeah, okay. So what do you think, Katrina?
Look, excuse me. I think, having watched Boston Legal, I think William Shatner has just... He's settled into his own quirky acting style. And those scenes between him and Spader...
Yep.
You know, their acting chemistry was unbelievable. So I think it's wonderful that William Shatner's got this new...
Hello.
So I'm just signalling to Katrina to get closer to the microphone.
Not one back.
Thank
now,
you for that.
Yes. So I think anything that William Shatner does, if he's able to be let off the leash, is going to be great.
I think so too. I think that's when William Shatner absolutely thrives, is when he gets to be a little bit what's the word I'm looking for here? Out of his mind.
Senile,
you know, whatever you want to call it.
I've got a couple more that is okay, fine, let's take a vote. Who wants fish for dinner? Yeah, democracy ain't so fun when it fucks you, is it? And the universe is like 14 billion years old. Seems silly to celebrate 1 year. It'd be like having a fucking parade every time I take a piss.
Hang on, Sid Dog's had to go.
Bye, Sid Dog. Sid Dog in our chat room has to leave us. All right, so I think this is
put
shaping
the rabbit
up.
Back in the cage.
Oh, yeah,
or your friend will be unhappy with you.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Don't make eye contact with the bunny.
All right. I think that the fact that they've also got the Will and Grace producers is a really good thing because they're not afraid of pushing the boundaries a little bit.
I don't know, man. They do a lot of stuff now. It just seems that they're trying to... America in general is just 90% rehashing old ideas, rebooting old ideas, or doing shit adaptations of things that, you know, like they've got
it's
one.
Easy.
Yeah. I mean, like they've got this. I don't know if you've ever read a book called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, which is by Tucker Max, but they made a movie out of that, and the movie did not even closely resemble the book. I mean, do you know what I mean? There's these things that get a lot of fanfare and whatever else, and it's just like. A whole conglomerate of people sit there and go, we should make this into a movie, but then they totally disrespect the source material and end up fucking
but
it up for
the
everyone.
But with Twitter, I mean, you've got a whole lot of funny things, and that's like a daily calendar, and you flip it over and you have a big laugh. How they're going to weave this into a narrative is going to be very interesting.
Think about it. All they really have to do with it is they can make the sitcom about anything they want. It's just basically a family sitcom with a slightly out there father, right?
It's just going to be all in the family part two.
Absolutely. They write the sitcom any way they want to, and all they have to do is go to the Twitter account, grab one or two choice lines that this guy's going to say. They throw those in as his dialogue. The rest of it, they're in control. They can do whatever they want with it.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is that it's still going to be about how they do the setup. Because if the whole scene is about the gag, then you're not going to have that connection with that family anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to put a little bit of trust in here that these two producers know how to work with a group. And so hopefully they'll be able to bring that kind of group dynamic. But let's face it, even in Will and Grace, it was Jack and Karen.
Forget
Will and Grace.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they just got whiny and annoying. You know, you just got to a point where just like, seriously, just shut up.
But they became the same character.
Yeah.
The male and female versions of the same character.
That's right. So
whereas
we watched
Karen
it for
Jack.
Karen and Jack. That's
no,
right.
No, just Jack.
Just Jack. We watched it for the outrageousness of those two. So in this show, you will watch it to see what comes out of William Shatner's mouth.
And on a sidebar, I just thought I'd mention this since we were bringing up Jack and Will and Grace. There was a fantastic, I think it was like one of those Lifetime or Hallmark movies or whatever else they did, on Martin and Lewis, which they did I think 3 or 4 years ago. And they had Jack playing Jerry Lewis.
Oh.
And it was the best thing I've ever seen. Like, it blew me out of the water.
I could see him doing that.
He nailed it. Absolutely.
And who did they have as
it.
Martin?
I can't. It was like, I recognize the face, but he's not a big name star. But
wow.
It was
a telly movie sort of thing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. The two of them worked brilliantly together, and he really was like he. It wasn't he was playing Jerry Lewis. He was Jerry Lewis throughout the entire thing, and it was a very unflattering look at Jerry Lewis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Quite frankly, everything I've ever read about Jerry Lewis, the guy is a prick. You know, I mean.
Oh, they showed him, like, faking stomach ulcers anytime Dean Martin got any sort of attention. He had, like, a doctor on call who would fly out to the studio anytime. And it was just, basically, it's like, look at me, what's going on? You know, I'm not getting attention. And, it's kind of sad in the end when you actually feel sorry for him to an extent because he's, you know, he's got bad family and everything else. But anyway.
I know you wanted to get on to the next story, but just touching on what Dave said, in terms of... movie representations of entertainment pairings.
Mm-hmm.
The movie version of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, that was brilliant. That had Reese Fiennes as Peter Cook.
I never saw that.
Oh,
was that
really
is
worthwhile seeing.
Because I love Cook and Moore.
It was just brilliant the way they had the relationship.
Who played Moore?
Oh, you've seen him in a million things. I'll look it up.
All right, you look that up. How about you look that up while I take us on a journey of another really short story here. In film news... the director of Paranormal Activity 2. Now, let me just stop and start say that again. They're making Paranormal Activity 2.
That's what's in the cupboard on the downstairs part of the landing.
That's right. It's like, what the hell? Anyway, so they are planning a Paranormal Activity 2, this time with a larger budget. And so we're assuming they're going to go out for an all-out ghost story a la The Entity, that sort of thing, from the 80s. And the director of Paranormal Activity was Kevin... Now, I'm going to massacre this last name. Kevin Grutter. Now, Kevin Grutter actually directed the last Saw film, which was considered to be one of the better of the previous six Saw films. But what's interesting is this guy just got the ultimate fuck you, because here he is. He's finally got his hands on a big-budget Paramount picture, sequel to the $200 million success of the first Paranormal Activity.
Shit, did it make that much money?
Something like that. It was like $160 million or something like that. For a film that only cost $15,000 to make.
See, and that's when you got two people doing impro and a lot of static.
Okay.
I looked up that guy.
Oh, yes.
The movie was called Not Also. What is it?
Oh, anyway. Not Only But Also.
Not Only But Also. And the guy that played Moore is Aidan McArdle.
Name doesn't ring a bell.
He does a lot of English stuff. I'm just trying to find something quick that jumps out at me that you would know.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll continue on with this story.
Sorry.
That's all right.
The Magical World of Ella Enchanted. There you are. He was in that as an elf.
I didn't see it.
Sorry.
I actually have testicles. I didn't see that one, sorry.
Really? This is from the man who said that we have to see Twilight?
We had to see Twilight.
I'm never going
to
let that go. I'm sorry. I will never, ever let that
Dave
go.
Dave has a commitment to his listening audience.
That's right.
And viewing. Hello?
And none of the listening audience watch Twilight, so...
Yes, but that's because they didn't go because they heard our review.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. This is not the Twilight show. What we've got here is we've got this guy getting the ultimate fuck you because basically Lionsgate, who produces the Saw films, turned around and said, oh, no, I'm sorry. You can't do that nice big budget Paramount film because we have an option on you and we want you to direct Saw 7. And so they've dragged him back to Saw 7, which he doesn't want to do, but because they liked what he did. So they're doing Saw is going on with a big franchise send-off, and they're going to do the last Saw film in 3D and all this sort of stuff.
Is that like a Harry Potter 7 version of Saw?
I guess so. And so he's been dragged back, really not happy. But what's interesting about this and where this is all going in the first place was the fact that Brian De Palma has now signed on to do Paranormal Activity 2. So we've got this big name, stylish director attached to what is essentially a really little film, right? So all I can think is that Paranormal Activity 2 is going to be nothing like the first one. It's going to be bombastic, big film, all style over substance, because that's what De Palma directs. And so it'll be very interesting to see where he goes with that. It says in this Ain't It Cool article where I read this, it actually says their opinion. It says, because if Paramount is literally ready to unleash hell, then I want nothing more to see Brian De Palma take his first full-on horror movie since The Fury. So it will be very interesting to see if Brian De Palma still has it in him.
Yes, and they, since you said that they're going to kill off the Saw series, I think you mean kill it off for 6 months until one genius executive goes, we should reboot it. It hasn't been done for at least 3 months, so we should start
there's
again.
There's been a Saw film in the cinemas every Halloween for 6 years. Right? What will happen is this Halloween will have Saw 7 in 3D. They'll send it off. They'll say, that was the last one. Miss one Halloween and then say, actually, we need a Halloween film. And it'll be back. 1 year. I guarantee.
No, but then if they wait 2 years, then they can have the 10-year anniversary and then they can have a 20-year anniversary like Halloween.
Fantastic. I buy that.
Oh, man. I just should be in marketing. Where's my little skinny ponytail?
I completely buy that philosophy. All right.
You need a soul patch as well.
Oh, dear.
All right. I got a trailer for us.
Please no.
I'm just going to...
Please don't.
Work myself up into this. All right. As
Do you have Joe Esposito playing in the background for this one?
As we know, Will Smith's son, who Katrina and I were such fans of in The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Leaving behind to die.
Not. And Jackie Chan are starring in the remake of The Karate Kid, which for a short time was actually called The Kung Fu Kid, which makes a lot more sense.
Yes, because Jackie Chan, not being Japanese,
and not doing karate, and in the trailer himself, he actually says, I will teach you Kung Fu. So it's like, why is it called The Karate Kid at all? Anyway, a trailer for this, which we played on the show, surfaced about 4 months ago, whatever it was. And we played it, and we all kind of looked at it and went, eh. A second trailer has now surfaced, which shows a few more scenes. And look, I'm going to play this trailer because the film looks nice. It's beautifully photographed. It just looks fantastic. The fight scenes actually look a lot even more authentic than the 80s ones do, because it looks like they put more effort into that. But I can't get past Will Smith's son. I'm sorry. I really don't like him as an actor.
He was all right in, Thingy of Happiness, Pursuit of Happiness.
I hated that film.
The movie was a downer, but the child was all right.
Yeah, I hated that film.
Yeah, I'm already going to put my hand up and say I'm going to take a bye on the week of this show, watching this movie.
I'm not even sure if we will review this. But anyway, let's have a look at it. We're going to leave the mics open, just in case somebody guffaws unintentionally. Anyway, here we go. Here's the Karate Kid remake.
I feel like we're on a quest to start a new light. Go ahead.
Ask him, what's your name in Chinese?
Dude, I'm from Detroit.
Was that necessary?
Gonna do something? I just wanna go home.
This is home.
I thought you were just a maintenance man.
The only way to stop them is to face them.
I will teach you real kung fu.
Hang up your jacket. Take it down. Put it on. Take it off.
I already did.
Jacket off.
Kung fu, you've seen how we put on the jacket. Be strong. Take off the jacket. And lives in how we treat people. Everything is kung fu.
Take it off!
to the energy around you.
I get it. You're Yoda and I'm like a Jedi.
Okay, kill me now.
Your focus needs more focus.
I don't want to be scared anymore.
Life will knock us down, but we can choose to get back up. Remember, always strong.
That's nasty.
You know, I could even almost buy this film if they had called it The Kung Fu Kid and said, we're just reimagining, there's that word, but reimagining the first one. But not trying to remake it. You know what I mean? Whereas they're trying
what's the difference between reimagining and reimagining?
We actually had this whole defining thing at
one
point. I know,
and I got lost then. Try again with me. I'm sorry.
Well, with a reimagining, and see, it doesn't really work with this because it is a remake of a film that existed as a film. But when we talked about the remake, the reboot, the reimagining, reimagining is where if you have it coming from a source material and you would say, this is one person's interpretation of that source material, this is somebody else's interpretation, this is your reimagining, because you're basically saying, I've got this written word, this is how I imagine it, this is how somebody else did it, right? A remake is where you take a film and you make a remake of that film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no source material. You're remaking an existing film.
Movie, yeah.
And a reboot, of course, is with a series where you basically say, the series has run its course, we're starting it again.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's like the Batman movies.
That's like the Batman movies, right. And the James Bond movies of recent time. So in this case, even though the terminology going by that theory doesn't really work, I would actually have more respect for them to try that and say, you know, we like the basic philosophy of the original film. Let's try and do something different with it by making it kung fu, making it Chinese, you know, giving it a different philosophy. Because let's face it, the Chinese and the Japanese are different.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, the basic concept of the film has already changed the philosophy because Miyagi always said to Daniel, fighting is the last resort. In this film, he says the only way to stop it is to stand up to them, yep. You know?
So I'm waiting for the Jewish reinterpretation, the Krav Maga kid, which I'm really looking forward to seeing that, where he gets trained by an ex-Mossad agent. I don't get it. I mean, the Karate Kid, even though I've watched it fairly recently, and it is so lame.
Like, it is, absolutely.
By today's standards,
the first
standards,
one was
the
good, but the second and the third and however many weren't before.
See,
the
See, my favorite one's actually the second one. I love the second one. I love it when he goes to, when they go to Japan, and I just love that. It's so much fun.
I
love his friend Miyagi. it's like if you try and speak, you sound like you're going to have a stroke.
It's what they do with all of the American films, is like when they have a Japanese person in, well, except for current reinterpretations, where they're like, I must talk like this when I'm a Japanese.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Look at Star Trek. For Sulu, you know, they made it a different breed of Asian. That guy's Chinese.
Is he Chinese or is he Korean?
He's Korean.
Well,
he's not Japanese.
No, but I mean, I can even buy that, because Star Trek was a complete reboot. They basically said, we're going to reboot it, we're going to do something, and it worked. You know, for all intents and purposes.
Look, don't get me wrong. I loved the new Star Trek with a love that was pure and yet new. But I think this Karate Kid thing, they should have just said, it's a new version. It's like, you know, it's gone to another country. Let's take it fresh.
But that's right.
But that's Hollywood for you. They just, when they have somebody, it's Asian for them. You know, Asian encompasses Vietnamese, Korean, Chinese, Japanese. They're all the same. You know, you can just interchange whichever
you
want.
If anything, this film is actually incredibly insulting. Its title is incredibly insulting.
I know. I agree.
So, because, I mean, the Chinese are out there right now going, that's not karate. What the hell are you doing?
What if they move it to Detroit? It's the boxing kid, but it's really the karate boxing kid.
But
like, what?
In Detroit, he could be learning karate or kung fu or whatever it is he's learning. He's in China learning kung fu. We hear him actually say in the trailer, I will teach you kung fu. You know? It's
like, there's two things. I'm waiting to see if there's the sweep the leg line in the film, and if Ralph Macchio comes in as like the head of the Cobra Kai. The
and I mean, what's the Karate Kid without its signature, you know, crane move thing?
I know, I want
And they're
that.
Not going to do that because it's make-believe to start with, but it fits more within the karate philosophy.
I love the fact that, you know, how you got on that pole in the first place and for the water to go around. It's just great. They did that in Spaced. So anybody that ever saw the Simon Pegg Jennifer Stevenson.
That show is genius.
I love that. I bought myself the box set of that for my own Christmas
I actually want
present.
That box set. I've only seen, I think, 3 episodes
out of
it.
Yeah. I love it.
I catch up with it on
even
UK
got,
TV.
In the box but, you know. Set, they've even got the homage-o-meter about which, if you don't know what the homaging to in the scene, it's got underneath, but of course I know what they all are.
It's genius. One of my mates actually got to interview all three of them when they came out here, and
really?
He brought his space box set, and Nick Frost signed it. Thanks for the route. I love telling that story because like, he said to me, like, these guys are the friendliest. You know, it was before, I think it was just when Shaun of the Dead kicked off, they interviewed them,
yeah,
so it was
yeah.
before... They blew up.
I loved it. I loved that show. Sorry, Dave. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Back on task.
Back on task for a second because we're just going to cut through a couple of these really quickly. All I want to say is that...
Oh, hang on. Red Robin says Kung Fu is actually Tibetan if you go way back.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Everything's Tibetan if you go way back.
Absolutely.
I don't know what that means, but...
It's pretty deep.
I'm just letting it...
Maybe I'll get a tattoo on my arm.
And then go dot, dot, dot.
.org.com
Sorry.
Are we back?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Meanwhile, back at the show.
Just to let you all know that there is a possibility, and I'm not going to say it's a great possibility, but there is a possibility that hope is looking up just a little bit. I'm not saying totally, but just up a little bit, that Pirates of the Caribbean 4 might have a shining moment in it because Ian McShane has just been signed to play Blackbeard.
Savvy.
Why can't they just stop it?
Well,
I would say
give it a stop it, move it on. You've done this, but if they're going to persist on doing this, they've got a director change. Rob Marshall is coming in to direct it, and Ian McShane is a legend.
So, I love Ian
McShane. You know, the worlds exist within that man's vocal range. But the bottom line is, you know, number three was such a dud. Stop it, walk away, do something new.
Yeah,
can't they find another ride at Disneyland to do a show?
You know what? When you got to look at it from a producer's point of view, and a producer's point of view is going to be that even if you didn't like part three still made $250 million
well,
in the box office.
Well, is the Depp involved?
The Depp is involved. Jack Sparrow is back.
How
I'd
much
like
money
to see...
must they have thrown at Johnny Depp to do number four?
I don't know. Considering the stuff that he's done recently, I don't think... It's like, what, a film without Tim Burton? Sure, I'm in.
The saddest point for me, though, was...
In Imaginarium, Dr. Parnassus, he was quite good.
The saddest point for me was that Russell Brand was supposed to be playing a pirate in it as well, and he's pulled out. And that, I think, would have been awesome.
I want to see
I think Russell
him
Brand
go against...
actually is a pirate in real life. Where would be the acting?
I want to see him go against, for a totally different thread for this series, I'd like to see him go against Yellowbeard.
Okay, yeah, with the little burning things
yes.
and everything. Yeah, absolutely.
So then you can have Captain Jack and Yellowbeard.
Speaking of seafaring adventures...
Yeah.
We can all relax at this point.
I can't even think of a sea shanty tune to put in as a bumper, sorry.
It's okay. I was about to say, speaking of the seaside, we can all relax. It has been announced the battleship won't be in 3D. There's your public service announcement.
Wait on. Beep, 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 beep. Okay.
Dave, you look like you're about to have a stroke on this.
I want to see, Connect 4, the movie.
Yeah,
I love that
game. I'm sure it's coming.
I don't get... it's just, I'm trying to think of... who the fuck they would market this movie to, or who would sit there and be like, awesome, I'm going to go and see... You know what I want to see is Solitaire, the movie. It's
yeah,
going to be
I think
fantastic.
So.
Excuse me. Down Periscope with Kelsey Grammer was, in fact, Battleship, because it was that whole submarine, you know, they're there, let's be quiet, don't drop a coin, blah, blah.
You haven't been on the show before. Have you heard about the Battleship movie? This is Hasbro being directed by Peter Berg, and it's the battleships go out and they fight aliens.
Okay.
This doesn't resemble the game.
But that's
in any
why
way,
you need 3D,
form.
You see.
Yeah, and you...
Because you've got to move through
well,
space.
Apparently it's not going to be in 3D.
It's X,
in
4D. Y, and Z axis.
Hasbro CEO Brian Golder actually said, I think it's a really unique story.
Excuse me, and then the pornography one would be Twister.
I'm sorry.
That game.
I'm having a little bit of trouble with this.
Yes,
I think,
Red Robin, what about you know? You know the game.
Absolutely.
Put down the magic
I think
gun.
It's a really yeah. unique story. And unlike a lot of those other alien stories, this is really not about aliens that came here to do us harm. Well, what's the point?
Is the battle they took their parking space? What?
I think this is the precursor for Mastermind, the game, the movie, which
no,
is going to be fantastic.
Oh. And Boggle.
But he does say...
And Hungry Hippos.
He does go on to say...
That would be awesome.
That'd be an African adventure one, like the Mogambo of the 20th century.
He does go on to say that no discussion of 3D at this point. I think that this is going to be a big spectacle in and out of itself.
I think he's in and out of himself. Seriously,
if you need a big spectacle, shouldn't Michael Bay direct it? I mean, really, shouldn't he?
He should. He should, but he's too busy off doing Transformers 3.
He's busy off wrecking more of my childhood.
More, less than meets the eye.
Yeah, it's getting that way. All right.
On a Transformers-related note, last night, I many years ago, when the first film came out, I bought myself the big Optimus Prime.
My nephew Sam's got
mega super duper thing, and so I sat there yesterday and finally took it out of the packaging and thought, you know, I'll just transform it into the truck. Remembering when I was a kid, the transformer was like three spins and boom, it was done. Man, you need a fucking engineering degree to get that thing.
You do.
Seriously, I was there for like 25 minutes going.
You got the instructions set out here, like
yeah, man. I was like,
you were 10 now. You see, your brain's changed. You see, as a 10-year-old, you probably did go. And it was done.
I don't think so, because I looked at it and seriously, like I was really impressed with how well they put it all together and that it actually does, you know what I mean? Like it still looks like him, but it really looks like a kick-ass truck. But I was just blown away. I was like, how the fuck is a 5-year-old kid going to work out how to do this shit?
What is it that Tom Lehrer says in that song? So simple, only a child can do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine, maybe I'm getting old. Screw you guys.
Yeah, okay, meanwhile, back at the show.
I think we're all getting old. All right, we got another trailer here, and God, I wish Josh was here for this one.
Me too, because I'll have nothing to say.
No, you're not going to have anything. Although you've probably seen the original, yeah?
Do you know I've never seen any Nightmare on Elm Street ever
in the
whole of my life.
Who are you? Get off my show.
I'm sorry, I've only recently come on to Zombies. Yes, I do prefer the slow movie.
Did you see
ones.
Zombieland? Because you weren't here for the...
No,
for the,
I didn't.
Oh, Zombieland, what a film. Great
Zombieland
film.
Is awesome.
It's awesome. All right, anyway, back to this. This isn't Zombieland. A Nightmare on Elm Street, as we know, is being remade. And the big draw card on this is Jackie Earle Haley.
Is he going to play the guy with the
Freddy,
thing and ask?
He's Freddy Krueger, right. Yep. Now, Jackie Earle Haley, as we all know, I'm an enormous fan of.
And
brilliant. I can basically watch him read the phone book at this point. And I pay money to see that. You know, I just love him. Anyway, and...
So when's Nightmare on Elm Street? The early years, like before
it's
he
a
got
it's a reboot
the
of
short
the whole
thing
series.
And
they're starting the whole thing all over again.
It's a reboot of Edward Scissorhands.
Now I have to say that I'm not a big fan of Platinum Dunes, who's producing this. This is Michael Bay's company, and they remade Friday the 13th, and they remade what was the other one they did? Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And,
which was fantastic because it had Jessica Biel running around in a singlet for the entire movie.
A sweaty singlet, too. It was pretty cool. Anyway, but the point is that they haven't got a great track record of quality. Now, the teaser trailer for this came out a few months ago, which we played on the show. And the problem with the teaser trailer, Josh and I were actually talking about it, it looks good. Like, you know, visually it looks like the original Nightmare on Elm Street, but they didn't show us enough of Jackie Earle Haley, so we didn't really get to see Freddy Krueger. This new trailer came out a couple days ago, and it actually has a lot of Freddy Krueger in it. And I gotta say, I put this up on the blog as well this week, you know, I'm reserving judgment on this because by all accounts looking at this trailer, they look like they might have got it right. Now, the only problem is that trailers can often be mini, very, very deceiving. And when we actually watch the film, we go, oh my God, what are they
all doing? The best bits were in the trailer.
Absolutely. But looking at this trailer, if you've seen all the Nightmare on Elm Street films as much as I have, you look at these films and you go, they've actually got a lot of shots in here that are lifted straight from the 80s original. So they're paying homage to the original.
So you mean they've almost framed the scenes in exactly the
same
way?
No, not the whole film. Just certain key moments.
Scenes,
like,
okay.
So like these iconic moments from the first film. One is where the claw comes out of the water with the girl in the bath, comes up between her legs. That's in here, exactly like it was.
Oh, they'll find
original.
A way to fuck it. Some studio exec will come in and go, we need a puppy dog in this to hit this.
It is Michael Bay, remember. So they're going to find some way to fuck it up.
Maybe his hand will transform into something else.
Yeah, anyway, so have a look at this real quick. And as I say, I'll talk with Josh a little bit more about this next week as well, because I'm sure Josh is actually all very eager to see this. So I'm a bit sorry that this trailer came up this week. But anyway, let's have a quick look at it. Here it is.
Hello? Anyone here? Hello?
If you keep falling asleep, they're gonna kick you out of here.
Sorry. I had another nightmare last night. I can't tell what's real anymore. Is there anybody else out there that this is happening to?
Every time that I dream, there's always this man.
That's his mark, isn't it?
ready.
Oh my God, you've seen him too. Who are you?
Remember me.
It's me, it's you, it's Dean, Jesse, Chris.
He's in all of our heads, Nancy. We gotta stop this.
How?
Don't fall asleep.
I haven't slept in 3 days.
We're running out of time.
At the 70-hour mark, the insomniac will begin to experience micro-naps. It means you're dreaming, but you don't know it. Even if you're awake.
Oh, God.
No. Just me.
Something that'll put you right to sleep.
No.
This might sting a bit.
That's not nice.
Okay, so there's A Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake. I'm waiting for the chat room to go, nyeh, nyeh, nyeh. Because you know, that's what chat rooms do. Dave, you look like you're frozen in the spot. What's going on there?
I'm sorry.
I have nothing to say about this movie.
Okay, cool.
Look,
all right.
Look, Rorschach was such a brilliant character. I think he could have... I mean, it's almost like... What's his name? Christian Bale cracking out the same raspy voice for Batman as for John Connor.
That's
I'm
what he
sorry.
Did.
Well, your mother, the consummate bloody actress, would say, "I'm sorry, different character, different voice." Would it kill them? Would
it
kill them?
It was different voice. One was John Connor, and one was Bruce Wayne.
No, I'm talking. I'm back to Nightmare on Elm Street. It's the same Rorschach voice.
One's Rorschach, and one's Freddy. It's totally
right.
Different.
Just because it says it on a page in IMDb doesn't make it true, Dave.
It does. It's Wikipedia that you
yeah,
have to
that's
worry
right,
about.
Yeah, that's right, Wikipedia.
IMDb says Haley, I can watch him read the phone book.
No, look.
No,
excuse
Dave.
Excuse me.
No.
Who was more vehement than me about bloody how good he was in The Watchmen? I was blown away. I guts that bloody comic book in one sitting, and we went and saw Watchmen, and it was fantastic. But I'm sorry. What's this man's motivation?
I'm
why?
Not convinced
why
by
is
his
killing
voice
these
either.
People?
I think that there's just... I got no emotion through... I mean,
yes,
I get
yes,
it.
You're right.
But there was, his voice was so flat through the whole thing. I was just like... I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of horror anyway. But there was a part of me that was like, okay, I'll check this shit out. And just looking at it, I was like, I'm not scared. I'm not intrigued as to who he was. Robert England. He gave such an amazing performance. Like, as I said, I hate horror movies, but I loved Nightmare on Elm Street because he was just so over the top. And it was that almost tiny bit of tongue-in-cheek campiness going on.
I'm going to say, Red Robin
just agreed with you. She didn't think the guy had the same charm as Robin.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one thing that this is missing is that Robert England had humor.
Yeah.
And that's what made him so maniacal, was the fact that no matter all the horrible things that he was doing, he always had some quick comeback on it that made it kind of, you see the laugh go, that's horrible.
But if you're going to be really evil and you're doing something appalling, if they're having fun while they're doing it, then you can say, oh, they're having fun. Yes, yeah. You can see that's what makes them extra spooky.
Yeah, it's like when you watch something like Dexter now, which lends a lot borrows a lot from the early films like that, because it does have that, wow, that's fucked up, I can't believe I just saw him do that, but then part of you is laughing inside. Whereas this, I think they're going for the whole shock or, you know, all of that sort of thing, where I just don't think there's going to be any personality.
But wasn't that sort of part of what was wrong with Werewolf? Like, you'd have a person and then suddenly, poof, they're knocked out by
the
Wolfman, which is just bloody appalling. And it's the same thing. It's like going to be bang, bang, bang. I want to watch a movie. I don't want to watch a rock video clip with stuff just being like that. Sorry, listeners. But, you know, that's what I want. I want to see something that's going to be authentically suspenseful. And that's why when the chick... It would have been funny if she was about to have a pap smear and the chick came up with little sharp fingers. But the bottom line is, that was scary because it was like reality overlaid with the horror.
And true. That wasn't me who said that comment.
I know.
Amazing.
I'm stunned.
I'm sorry.
No, please.
Please don't ever apologize. That was fantastic.
All right. Dave loves being out-Daved.
Oh, yes, man. When I'm blushing, that's my favorite.
Yes, you'll notice, Dave, I will always use the correct terminology.
Yes, that's why we call her Miss Katrina.
That's right.
All right, we've got to move on because we're running later as usual. So let's move on very quickly. I just want to bring this up very quickly that you know how they're making a new Conan movie.
Feel the lamentations of the women's.
Absolutely. I've got a real issue with a studio jumping the gun on marketing. Jumping the gun on marketing when you haven't actually cast. This is a teaser poster, which I'm bringing up on screen right now. And when we post this episode, I will actually post the link to this. It's at the movieposterawards.com. This was a teaser poster that came out for the new Conan movie last year. Now, if you look at this poster, I mean, they're obviously modeling this on Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? Because this was...
Is his hand supposed to be in front of him or behind his back?
No, they're in front of him. He's holding a sword.
That's not very anatomically correct. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Even if you're beefed up and you've got full of steroids, that is still the way that shoulder is. It's still wrong.
No, actually, that looks a lot like Schwarzenegger's shoulder.
No, the I will show you.
It's the new film Conan the Librarian.
I will show you a picture of Schwarzenegger as Conan holding his sword.
No, I'm just talking about that actually, peck which comes up to the glenohumeral joint.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, look at this guys. Arm. Okay, look at this arm and the size of this arm and the size of this bicep. Now, this is the man who has been cast as the new Conan. So this poster came out.
Dave,
wow, that
you.
Doesn't look anything like Conan.
Who's that? Who the it fuck looks like is Russell that? Brand.
This is the man from Stargate Atlantis. His name is Jason Momoa.
I love this guy, man.
And he's been cast to play Conan in the new Conan movie.
I'm going to have massive disagreements with you about this.
No, I'm not saying that he's badly cast, because in fact,
but
if
the
you've
airbrushing
read,
on this guy's stomach's wrong as
if
well.
You've
the
ever
muscles
actually
are wrong.
Read, if you've actually ever read a Conan book by Robert E. Howard, Conan is actually not described as being Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's described as looking like that.
Well, this guy, he was like the. And I was a huge fan of Stargate Atlantis, and I know I was like one of three people in this country who watched it, but he was like the. He's like 6'4 or something. He was the bruiser of the team, and he has genuine presence. Like he's
does
great.
He
used to be like one of those North Shore, you know, like. Soapy, bitchy actors. But when he moved into this, he really does
is
have...
Is he Australian?
No. He's just got a real sort of, like...
LJ Raggy in our chat room has just said, this guy is great in Stargate, so...
Yeah, man, I really enjoyed him. And he always came in as, like, you know, everyone else would be thinking whatever else. And he'd just come in and go, I want to fuck shit up. And he'd just, you know, start beating people's heads in and whatever else. And he really is convincing. And I think that this has reaffirmed my faith because I was going to actually just blow right past this. And
no,
just
no,
go,
I actually really... So far, I really like the casting of Conan. I think what... I think is Marcus Nispel is directing it.
Mm.
No, not Marcus Nispel. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But
is
the point,
it taken from a Conan book or is it...
It's based... As far as I'm aware, it's based going back to Robert E. Howard's original source material. They're not trying to continue on from the ones that were already made. They are going back and restarting again.
So is Mickey
again.
Rourke going to be dressed like the wrestler?
Mickey Rourke is playing his father.
He's going to have blonde streaks?
I don't know.
And whiplash?
We don't know anything at this point. All we know is that he was in serious negotiations. It looked like he's finally signed. And MMA fighter Bob Sapp, who I don't have a picture of, but he's been actually appeared in several films. He was in, unfortunately, that horrible Rob Schneider film, Big Stan, which was quite possibly one of the worst comedies I've seen in a long time.
Oh, that.
But he...
never saw it.
He's a huge bruiser of a beast. And I think he was actually in, from memory, the Elektra movie again. I'll pass a picture around. This is him.
You know, I didn't mind that Elektra movie.
Yeah.
You know him once you see his face. He's been cast as the main villain of the piece. Now,
So
I'm actually for this at the moment because I think that if they go back, I love the Schwarzenegger film, but it really isn't as close to the Robert E. Howard originals that it could be. And so it'd be interesting to see somebody really try and do it faithfully.
I hope they make this like the Scorpion King. And I'm not being funny.
I love the Scorpion King.
Excuse
I want them
me,
to
you're
make
right.
It.
The Scorpion King had some really great movies. It was a bit rollicking. I didn't mind it. I liked it.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, it was stupid as all hell, but it was just, it was classic action movie formula.
Yeah.
I agree the action was good, but I actually really liked the tone and mood of the first Conan film.
I really liked the Kelly and the Who in...
All right, the issue that I was bringing this up for, and this is for our chat room and this is for you guys, is that I just think that if you're going to start marketing film, try and pick an image that isn't quite so...
the previous
cut.
Person.
Because as I was about to say, when you look at this picture of Conan and then you look at this picture of this guy, you sit there and go, wrong marketing completely.
He might have time to work out. First of all, that's probably from the North Shore days when he was shooting like soaps in the States. Mm-hmm. He's actually significantly bulked up more than that, even a couple of years ago, in Stargate Atlantis.
That is so CG. That is so airbrushed.
Of course it's airbrushed.
But what I'm saying, it's not even... the abs are totally wrong. Like, so what he actually may look like, you're right, he could be well and truly...
No, no, I remember from the series, he's much bigger. His arms, for sure, are a lot bigger than that.
He's got some serious dreads at the moment, too.
So. Oh, dude, he's got, like, you
know... Is this going to be Conan with dreads, or...?
I don't know.
Predator, the...
I don't know. All we know at this point is that the film is supposed to start shooting mid-March, so they're really... It's starting to roll together now quite
I'm intrigued now, man. I kind of want to see it because the guy is a decent actor, and I mean, considering what Arnie did in Conan.
Well, if they are rebooting it, then they will. Thulsa Doom will play a part because he was actually quite a. But Thulsa Doom wasn't taken out in one book. Thulsa Doom was a long term.
Was that the guy that had that ran the snakes?
That
the
was James
Earl
Jones. Jones character. Yeah. So the Thulsa Doom cult and everything is throughout the books. So,
but the Jason Momoa, he will only have to say like three words. That's it.
If they go
snake attack.
Yeah.
Snake back off.
No, it'll be lemon. What is it? What's
now that? No snakes.
All right. Now, very quickly, we're going to run through a couple of stories and then we'll kind of talk about all of them together because it's all comic book related.
Let me just say Dave is about to have a nerdgasm.
We're both about to have geekgasms right here. First of all, Mark Strong confirmed as Sinestro.
Yes!
Ow! Sugar! That hurt me. Away.
Secondly, the Flash movie is now on again. It is now they've actually hired a man to direct the film. He's the person who is, I should say in deep negotiations. Greg Berlanti is the leading contender to helm The Flash. If his name looks familiar, that's because he wrote the Green Lantern movie. So The Flash is finally moving ahead. Nobody cast at this point. Ryan Reynolds was at one point, but nobody at this point. Thirdly, David Goyer... And where's his name? David Goyer and one of the Nolans. It's not Christopher. It's one of
Bruce.
The... No. Where is it? Hold on. I can't believe I lost this page. Where is it? Oh, Thomas. Oh, no. Thomas Tall. Where is it? Goyer and... Oh, crap. Why have I lost that piece of paper? One of the Nolans. It's not Christopher Nolan. It's not the guy who wrote Batman. It's another Nolan. Are writing currently a reboot of Superman called The Man of Steel. And now, the reason why they're doing a reboot, and I've got a couple of points here. First of all, number one, Thomas Tull, the head of Legendary Pictures, got tired of all the discussion and decided, just let's do it. All right? He said, so he went to Goyer, and Goyer had an idea that actually takes the movie back to the John Byrne incarnation. Do you know
back in the 1950s, the Golden Age?
I guess. John Byrne. It says the John Byrne incarnation, modern, believable, fun. So Tull got Goyer hired. So basically, the Superman is now being written. It says the film will not be called Superman. It will be called The Man of Steel. Brandon Routh will not star in the film. Nicolas Cage will not star in the film.
Thank you, God.
And Bryan Singer... is not expected to direct.
See, they're going on the John Byrne... If they're talking about John Byrne, his miniseries was in 1986 for a modern new film.
But that's a golden age of Superman. I'd like to see that Superman.
Who was the
made.
Superman in that one?
No, comic books. This is the comic books.
Oh,
but that was when they went all wacky with it, you know?
No, was great. That's when they first started being television hosts, and that's when the relationship with Lois started, when... Clark and Lois were kind of hooking up, and that was actually a really good, and a lot of penciling by Kurt Swan from memory back then, which was Kurt Swan was my favorite Superman penciler.
It was it was predominantly based on Earth. It wasn't his crazy outer space adventures.
A lot of really urban stuff, a lot of Brainiac stuff back then as well. I'm kind of keen on that.
I'm just having a look now, which I should have done before the show, but you know. Hey.
All right. Anyway, so that's the Superman news at this point. Now, last but not least in news is Captain America casting.
You didn't do The Flash.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, sorry.
Last but not
we
least...
We did. We just did it so quickly. You
did
it.
It was five.
Flashed it. All right. Last but not least is Captain America is deep into pre-production. And casting has been ongoing for the Mr. America himself. They've now come down to a short list, and this is disturbing on all accounts. Dave, have you actually had a chance to go through these names yet?
I'm looking at it now. To be honest with you, the one guy that I am happy about that they've done is the guy who they put down first, which is Scott Porter, who is in Friday Night Lights playing Jason Street, and he's also in Caprica. I don't know how many episodes you've gone in.
Two.
Have you seen the crazy cultist chick's son? Or alleged son, the blonde sort of beefcake.
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, that's Jason Street. Personally, my pick for this would be he's already blonde, he's already got the right build, and he already has half of Captain America's name in his name, which is Captain Awesome from Chuck.
Absolutely.
I think he would be brilliantly cast.
And unfortunately, he's not on the shortlist. Let's go through the shortlist really quickly,
though. John Krasinski.
John Krasinski is apparently the number one choice at this point, which I think is ridiculous. For those who don't know who he is, he's actually in The Office, the American remake of The Office. He plays...
And he was the bloke out of It's Complicated.
Yes.
That film doesn't exist.
I never saw it.
Now... Also on the short list is Michael Cassidy, who appeared in Smallville and who tested for the Superman movie when McGee was going to direct it. Patrick Pfluger, one of the stars of the 4400, and he most recently appeared in Tobey Maguire's Brothers. Scott Porter from Friday Night Lights, Wilson Bethel from Generation Kill, and Mike Vogel from Cloverfield. Apparently, Chase Crawford from Gossip Girl has also tested. So
I'm looking for the link that you sent. I can't see any of these names.
Actually not on that link. The link I sent you was a slash film link. If you look at that slash film, there is a link on there to DHD, which will take you to The Hollywood Reporter, which is where I'm getting these names from. Apparently, all of these people have been put on a studio 30-day hold during this testing process. So they are serious about these people. And I just got to say that Chase Crawford is terrible. John Krasinski, I just think, is completely wrong.
That none of them look like
no.
Steve Rogers, like the classic. I mean, anyone, if you don't know Captain America, he is just... Basically, they might have well called him Captain Germany because he's just, you know, this really muscly,
blonde
he's hair, Aryan.
Blue eyes, perfect all-American boy, you know? And they give him the super soldier drug, and he becomes enormous and becomes super strong. And all
what was the name of the guy from Generation Kill?
I'm just Generation Kill is Wilson Bethel.
I'm just trying to see who that is. Q-Tip, are you serious?
So I'm just looking at this list, and I'm just going, no, I'm really... And all I could think is, and I hate to be...
Wilson Bethel could be all right if they spiked his hair up and, you know, bleached it. He's kind of got the look
but
and that
But is it the look
jaw.
Or is it the essence of the character? I mean, I haven't
Both.
Read the character. Isn't
the,
it more
the
about
look,
that?
The look is incredibly iconic.
When it comes to Captain America...
It's easy to shove in blue contact lenses and blonde someone's hair. Isn't it really going to be about the presence of the actor?
Yeah, but none of these guys have any...
Yeah, but none
that's
of
what I'm asking you. So right, you
look,
don't think they've got it?
Katrina, the thing about him for Captain America.
He's got a big jaw.
I'm going to try and find a picture of what my memory of Captain America looks like.
I mean, one of the issues with Captain America is he's such an iconic character. And I was talking to Dave about this last night when we were actually talking on the phone. And I was in doing some research on this, I actually came across a disturbing fact that apparently for a very long time... Will Smith was being considered. Now, I got to say this up front, and this is kind of a ranty thing, but I've got to say this up front because we've also had this issue of race coming up with the last Airbender movie. There are times when race does play a factor. The Super Soldier program, the whole Captain America...
Sorry, Katrina.
The whole Captain America...
That's the kind of...
Oh,
so Dave
okay.
is showing
okay.
Katrina a picture of Captain America.
It's kind of you're kind of envisioning a blonde Superman, like
Absolutely,
really that's the type of character that you want: chiseled jaw, you know, real presence.
Well,
and
that
just...
Wilson Bethel, I've just looked at him and he's a little bit fey, really. He's a little bit willowy. He should be out of.
You think he's fey? Go and have a look at Chase Crawford from Gossip Girl.
Okay.
I looked at that man. That made me spew in my mouth.
It's just terrible. Anyway, I was about to say about this Will Smith situation. You also have to look sometimes at the basis of the character. And now the basis of the character of Captain America was in 1939, 1940, whatever it was, during World War II, he was created to fight the Nazis.
He took the super soldier
And he
serum.
He was made a super soldier.
But why does he have to look like an Aryan?
No, not so much an Aryan, but he does have
I'm sorry, blonde and blue eyes is an Aryan.
No, because he was the all-American boy. That's all it came from. But the point is he has to be white. Because
he has to be
I'm not saying this to be racist, but in 1939, 1940... The American government would not have given the super soldier formula to a black guy.
Yeah.
It was not going to happen.
No.
Right? And so the fact that that's his background you can't cast somebody like Will Smith as the character. It's all nice saying, oh, but you know, in this racially different world and so forth, we can make a black S.H.I.E.L.D. agent with Nick Fury and change that around. And even that, I don't agree with. But you can say, okay, you could get away with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? You cannot get away with making Captain America black. It just doesn't work for the story.
Well, it's also, too, because nobody knows who the hell Nick Fury is. You've got that. Whereas Captain America is... I feel very strongly about this, because Captain America was actually with the Phantom, was the first comic, the first two comics I collected as a kid. So I've got about, 300 Captain America comics back home. And it just really is. He was your mum and apple pie, super clean cut. You know, when you think of the American, all-American jock, that was Captain America.
Captain of the football team. Yeah. But 1940s style prom. Yeah.
Not the douche jock, but real, like, all-around great guy.
But almost taking the great guy, like, that was Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, but making him athletic.
Because the thing about Captain America was that it was from this more innocent time. He was created, he was the first of what they hoped to create, an army to fight the Nazis and everything else. And then, of course, it all went wrong and he got frozen.
What I love
and
about...
And got defrosted in the modern world. But he is... He has from those, the that, 40s.
Yeah, you know? And you have to be true to the source. I mean, I totally agree with you. If that's the way the writer wrote it, it was written at that time, you don't suddenly try and make it be for now.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, like, unlike other superheroes, he doesn't really have any superpowers. All that he's
got super strength.
He's got super strength and agility and all of that. The main thing is that he's got his shield, which is made from a offshoot of adamantium, which they used for Wolverine's claws, called vibranium. Which basically means he can throw his shield, it bounces off many things. And the whole thing about
Cap... And it's unbreakable.
Yeah, so the whole thing about it is he'd use it to block bullets, whatever else, and then he'd run around, fling it off, and it'd hit like four guys and come back to him.
Like a boomerang.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, the whole concept of it is great because, in general, he's pretty much a defensive specialist. You know what I mean?
He was a leader, and that's the thing with the Avengers, was the fact that he was the leader of the Avengers because he was the super soldier who could control them all and everything else. And everybody respected him because he did no wrong. He was absolutely morally sound.
And that's very interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of the comics, the characters can have that ambiguity or the dark side.
Oh, there's no ambiguity to
him.
But that's what I'm saying. It's sort of if he's clean cut and he's, as you say, wholesome and mum and apple pie, then that's an interesting spot.
He is the anti-Watchman. It's like you look at that and you go, Captain America is the complete opposite to the
Captain America
comics.
Really is Marvel's version of Superman without coming from another planet. Like, seriously, he is.
Yeah, he's the Boy Scout.
He really is just, all about doing the right thing all the time, no matter the consequences, even if it puts him out, he will do that.
So, as a role model.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the absolute best casting that I can think of at this point is, you're right, Captain Awesome from Chuck. He would be...
He's
perfect.
Got the
What's that guy
look.
Called?
I don't know what the actor's name is.
Look that up for us? I'll look up Chuck.
Somebody can look that up for
his
us.
The character's name is Devin.
Red Robin
is
Devin
it's
something.
It's Devin. It's Captain Awesome. And he's brilliant. And he would be the perfect Captain America.
He just, look, the first time you look at him, he just has, as I said, chiseled jaw.
He's built.
And he just looks the part. Steve Rogers has always been... He's got a very commanding presence, and he's just a larger than life personality. He always has been, and even though they did do a few sidetracks with a few of the new reimaginings where they had him carrying a gun and stuff
that's the Ultimates, and I really don't like the Ultimates.
I don't look for me. Cap is he'll never kill anybody. It's just the way that he is. So I'm hoping that they don't jump the shark with this one. It would be lovely if they get it right.
So what's the guy's name?
Character's name is Devin.
Devin. Oh, there we go. Ryan McPartlin.
There you go. That should be Captain America. The only bad news that I can really see about this, other than the fact that they're heading in the wrong direction for the casting of the Captain himself, is the fact that Joe Johnson is signed as director. And Joe Johnson, as we know, was the director of that brilliant film that we all saw in the last couple of weeks, The Wolfman.
I didn't hate it as much as you guys did.
Oh, I was so angry.
Now, Joe Johnson,
I hated that movie.
No, look, I'm with Dave. I actually didn't hate the movie. I just didn't think it was particularly good.
Sorry, it's $17 a pop. It wants to be good. You don't want to sit there and like have something that's equivalent to off-milk
in
your mouth.
And I think the film actually suffered from the greatest sin that a film can suffer from, which is that it was mediocre. And I don't think it was the worst film ever made, but it was incredibly mediocre. And being mediocre, to me, is worse than being bad. To be absolutely awful, you can sometimes get something out of that. But to be mediocre, you just kind of sit there and go, you know?
Yeah,
it's got,
you're
it's
right.
got moments, it's got bad moments, it's got good moments. You're sitting there, bam, you know? And that, to me, is actually much more frustrating than me.
See, I missed all of that. I was too busy drooling over Emily Blunt.
Look, she's
and Emily Blunt was lovely.
And but she also didn't get to let Fluffy off the chain with her acting, you know?
No, and there was no point to her character.
She's an actress?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
All right, look, speaking of actors and actresses, we are running over time, so we're going to have to get into this film review. Today we are going to talk about the film From Paris with Love. Now, before we start on this, though, so I'm going to go on one of my little history tours. I hope you don't mind.
I don't have a bumper for that.
Okay, I have a little history tour for you. Before we actually start this film, I thought a little bit of background might help us just a little bit to explain why these sort of films are being made. Now, the history lesson for today is EuropaCorps. Now, EuropaCorps, for those who don't know, is a production company based in France. And we'll start with saying that Luc Besson, who is a director of great 80s films such as Subway, La Femme Nikita, The Big Blue, and Leon, The Professional. He's had a long-standing relationship with a man named... Sorry?
Fifth Element.
That came later, actually. That's why I'm saying
Excuse
this
Excuse me, I thought that was a... Even though people bagged that movie, there's a lot in that movie.
I love Fifth Element, but we'll come back to it because I am going to mention the Fifth Element in just a second.
But you can't say it in a sentence fast.
Now, I've got a guy here whose name I'm going to massacre, but Luc Besson has been in a long-standing relationship with a gentleman by the name of Pierre-Ang Le Programme. Who was a distribution director at Gaumont, which, funnily enough, I did not know, is actually the longest-running film company in the world. It was actually established in 1895. Pierre-Ang helped shepherd in virtually all of Besson's early films, including The Fifth Element, thank you, Dave, which is France's biggest export success in history. In 1997, Pierre-Ang became the deputy chief executive officer at Gaumont, and as we know, Gaumont produces a lot of films outside of France as well, a lot of American films.
How do you spell Ang?
It's A-N-G-E. Ange, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. In 2000,
Angie.
In 2000, Besson and Pierre, we'll just call him for argument's sake. In 2000, Besson and Pierre formed EuropaCorps, a large independent production house that also owns a company called The Digital Factory. Now, why I bring these up is because if you go see the movie we're about to review, you'll see these two logos come up very largely on screen.
Yes.
And it actually interested me as to what The Digital Factory was, and this will help us out. Digital Factory is a completely self-contained post-production house that operates in two locations in France, Paris and Normandy. It is owned by Luc Besson and EuropaCorps and offers filmmakers state-of-the-art editing and sound mixing services, and it also offers them a place to live while they're editing their films. These places are beautiful. They're like resorts, and they're completely equipped with all equipment to do your film. So people who shoot in Paris often stay at the Digital Factory while they're putting their films together. Owning 62% of EuropaCorps has allowed Besson the freedom to produce the films that he wants to do. Along with his own films, Angel A and the Arthur and the Invisibles films, Besson acts as producer and sometimes writer on numerous films. He has given many young filmmakers the opportunity to explode onto the scene and often getting picked up by Hollywood. A couple of examples of this would be Louis Leterrier, who directed The Transporter Unleashed, or Benny the Dog in America?
Danny the Dog.
Danny the Dog, thank you.
I
thought Unleashed
movie,
was great
man.
Fun.
Jet Li and Morgan Freeman. How can you go wrong?
Oh, it was great fun. So I think the title Benny the Dog is stupid, but Danny the Dog, whatever. The film was originally called Unleashed and Transporter 2 for EuropaCorps. Thank God he didn't go on to do Transporter 3. Somebody else did that.
No, he was a piece of shit.
But it's since been picked up by Hollywood for films such as The Incredible Hulk and the new Clash of the Titans film. Pierre Morel, who made a huge splash at EuropaCorps with District B-13, or District 13, sorry, in France it's actually just called B-13.
Yeah.
Because the
or
B...
Or Bienvenue or something like
well,
that.
Well, the B actually means district in France. And so when it came to America, they called it District B-13. So in other words, they're calling it District 13. But, B-13...
Which is a great movie. I have to have a moment. But, I mean, this is... I found it just... I was watching a bunch of trailers and just YouTubing, and after watching the beginning of Casino Royale, I became enamored with parkour and that free running and all of that, just for if people don't know. And one of the creators of parkour is actually one of the main stars of this film. And it is some of the most amazing action sequences I've ever seen in any movie, like the stuff. And it's funny because once you mention that to me and moving into From Paris with Love, there are certain scenes in the film that will break down that was like, the penny drops. I highly recommend it. They've actually got a sequel. I think it's called Ultimatum.
Which he didn't make, though. So,
oh, really?
No, he, Pierre Morel has moved on. So the B-13 Ultimatum is made by somebody else. Still with EuropaCorps, but it's a different director.
Handy. Great film. I highly recommend you go out and try and find that one if you can. It is very different. It is very French. And, some of the best action sequences.
And a lot of called District B-13.
It's in
B-13. Or
in Australia, it's called District B-13.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually on Foxtel often. You can find it on World Movies as well. Okay. So, all right. So continuing on with, say, the Pierre Morel who made his big splash with B-13. Unfortunately, not a box office smash. The film got critical acclaim, a lot of fans, but it only made like $2 or $3 million around the world. But he did get a second chance. This is one of the advantages of Luc Besson's company is the fact that because he self-finances, he can do these sort of things. Now, Pierre Morel was given a second chance when he actually made a very modestly budgeted film at $25 million called Taken with Liam Neeson. And here's a quick bite of Taken.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for ransom, I could tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it.
You have a 96-hour window.
What?
To never finding her.
No.
But if you don't, I will look for you.
Where is she?
I will find you.
Alright, so
I really enjoyed that.
So did
movie.
I.
Did Liam Neeson actually act in that?
He did, and he did.
Because he hasn't been. No, he hasn't been acting for a long time.
No, he was actually. We actually reviewed Taken on the show when it came out. This is going back sometimes before you actually joined us as well. I actually really Taken really moved me. It was from a father's point of view. I'm completely looking at this. If they took my child and I had his skills. Man, I would do exactly what he did. I mean, the fact that he's an ex-government killer, basically, and these guys fucked with the wrong father.
What I love is you've got a lot of... There's like three of these movies. I like to think of it as a trilogy, even though they're completely different actors and directors and everything. But they're kind of... I wouldn't say underground, but they're not mega mainstream movies. And it's that, Man on Fire, and Spartan.
I saw all of those other two, the Man on Fire and Spartan, and there was a lot in Spartan.
Spartan was fucking brutal. Some of the stuff that he does. I mean, you just watch some of those
Spartan's
scenes.
Spartan's directed by Mamet. Is that?
Yes, you're right.
It had the bloke that's his equivalent of Johnny Depp, his muse, which is William H. Macy.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, these are great movies and awesome. I guess you could call them revenge movies. I really like that eye, the way that they go. Like, Negan was not my... Like, when I heard of it, I was like, this is going to be shit house.
Well, I didn't think much of it at all, and then I saw that trailer, and just that sound bite, you sit there and just go, ooh, I got goosebumps, I'm ready for this.
I don't want to be the other guy on the other end of the
park. And I sat there watching it, and I've actually found the film to be one of the most visceral experiences I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Sorry, in the chat room, LJ Raggy, one, he said Fifth Element was the first DVD I ever bought, and also, he thinks it's a lot better than the Mel Gibson. Give me back my son!
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a much better film than Ransom. Absolutely. Anyway, so he got his second chance. He did Taken. Now, Taken actually took a year to come out in the States. We got it long before they did. But when it finally did come out worldwide, the film has actually gone on to make $226 million.
Wow.
And has become this enormous hit. And
so much for my little fringe comment.
I know.
But it was a fringe film, because now this is what brings us to this moment, which is... The philosophy that Europa has taken on, or EuropaCorps at this point, is that Luc Besson had a feeling that he wanted to make a string of low-budget films that actually focused more on real-world practical stunts and less on special effects. Shooting all the films in Europe, France in particular, but shooting them in English for an international market. Taken was basically the first of this string of films, and of course now we've got From Paris with Love, which is kind of the second. So From Paris with Love hasn't been nearly as successful has Taken has. I think it's only taken $22, $23 million in its first week.
It was the same director who did Taken, though.
Same director as Taken.
See, because I was checking out his filmography, and he's done a... He did a lot of... He was, like, I think, the cinematographer on, like, Danny the Dog and a whole bunch of those early films.
He was one of
films.
Louis Leterrier's regular.
And you can definitely see those that eye coming through a lot of the stuff that he's done.
Absolutely. So that kind of brings us to here. So the film we're reviewing today is, of course, From Paris with Love, written by Adi Hassak from a story by Luc Besson. It is directed by Pierre Morel, and it stars John Travolta and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. And here's the trailer for it. We'll have a look at the trailer, and then we'll come in, and we'll come in with a non-spoiler zone, and then we'll move into spoilers. Okay, so here's the trailer.
Yeah?
I'm a man short, Rhys. I need your help.
Sir, you do realize that I am not special ops certified.
We've got you working with our top operative, Charlie Wax. Besides, mostly driving Wax around.
Oh, close it! Close
it! Nail this job and consider yourself a member of the club. This town is a lonely town.
Hurry, stop! My prints are all over that car.
You want to stop in the middle of our getaway so you can wipe your prints and grab some files.
I'll be quick.
Quicker than this. Work for you?
From the director of Taken and the producer of The Transporter.
Sir, Wax's methods aren't exactly regulation.
Let's order off the menu.
How many more of them do you think there are?
Last census? About a billion.
John Travolta, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Who the hell is he?
This crazy partner they got me working with.
Tell me that wasn't some impressive...
Welcome to Paris, baby.
From Paris with Love.
Did you save the world today?
If only you knew, Caroline.
Okay, so that's From Paris with Love. Now, who wants to start us off? First of all, we need a synopsis. Who wants to give us a quick synopsis on this?
I will.
Okay.
Okay,
it's a change.
Story...
I usually do that.
Do you want to?
No.
The story starts with James, who is basically an executive assistant to the attaché for the United States in Paris. He appears to be a sycophantic yet highly organised fellow, but it is quite clear that he has aspirations to be further involved in the espionage game. Consequently, he's been given minor tasks up to this point, changing number plates and the like, and suddenly he is then given the opportunity to look after the John Travolta character called Wax, who has been sent to Paris on a mission, and this puts him out of his comfort zone and throws him into a world of danger and excitement.
That's a really wonderful rundown. Thank you very much, Katrina. Now, without spoilers, what did you think?
I was disappointed. I appreciate your earlier comment that this is supposed to be a buddy movie. I felt that John Travolta wasn't fully in the sense of his out there, off the leash stuff in terms of like the swordfish character that he played. Remember that one? That
baddie? Or in Face Off, it's Caster Troy.
Yes, yes. I believe that. I think if you look behind the eyes, there's still a bit of grieving. I was looking at the timeline in terms of when his son passed away, and I still think that really there's not that joy that should be, as we said earlier, in a good baddie, which even though he's a goodie doing bad things, he should still believe in what he's doing.
Interesting.
Okay. I believe that the James character, the Jonathan Rhys... Oh, how many...
Rhys-Meyers.
Oh, God, hyphenated names. I think he was a little bit out of his depth. What the hell was with that itty-bitty moustache? Has he been watching Errol Flynn movies? It was his little skinny moustache.
Hey, like, some people like...
No, them. You look like a bear in comparison to him. You've got a decent moustache happening. There was this itty-skinny thing. Anyway,
it's
I just...
It's the French thing. I'm D'Artagnan, huh?
Well, yes. No one... What is it? No one... What is it? My name is D'Artagnan. What is the guy that was out of Princess Bride?
My name is Ernesto Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Thank you very much. So anyway, I just believe that if Mirren was watching it, she would see that in some of the moments that he was playing the problem, I feel that he didn't have the charisma that was required of a leading man. I think the girlfriend, telegraphed her moves, and I think the backstory for her was inadequate. Paris, love Paris, been there. Or in the expression that some tourists go, oh, I've been there. that was always nice. The thing I found most enjoyable, and this is going to sound really stupid, was him carrying around the vase. He had to carry vase around. I'm not spoiling, but that actually, to me, was quite gorgeous as a link through.
Well, it's like a shtick that they do in a lot of these movies where they throw just, you know, some nonsensical thing in just for the heck of it, and it becomes the thing of the movie. And it's, you know, it's an old gag of, like, you know, a guy constantly carrying something that could break and knock, oh, let me catch this. And
yeah, but also that. It's almost like a lot of actors don't know what to do with their hands. So if him as the neophyte spy, he wasn't very good with guns. He didn't quite know what to do with himself. Carry the big vase. It was good. The locales are talked about, and no one can drive at speed through the streets of Paris ever. Like, that'd be like saying run through the CBD in Sydney. Not going to happen. Fight scenes, it was
gorgeous. Yeah, but that's the movie magic part, because believe it or not, you can't drive at speed through Los Angeles either. But,
no, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure you can't. All in all, I deliberately did, as I was asked, I did not read any of the reviews. I knew it wasn't getting good reviews, but I went in clean. I had a chocolate Magnum, classic. And, you know, I was ready to enjoy, but, you know, it didn't have the joie de vivre. Possibly the end scene, you know, had a link, you know, felt like, would you like a sequel with that? And and also the homage, which I won't spoil until we get to the spoiler zone for the John Travolta character from another film he was in.
All right, yeah.
I'm not saying anymore.
We'll come back to that one, because that actually was not one of my favourite moments. But, Dave, what did you think?
I wouldn't say I loved it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thoroughly?
Thoroughly. I like my action films big and stupid, and this definitely fit the bill. It had all of the criteria that I wanted, which was, you know, over the top, bad good guy, hot French chick. I don't care whether she can act or not. She just had to look good, and she managed to do that quite well.
She did wear orange shoes. Very difficult to get away with.
I didn't even know she was wearing shoes at point. I didn't look really below her kneecaps. I thought that Travolta did a hilarious job. I do agree with you that he did have he did seem to lose a little bit of the twinkle in his eye, which he has had in when he did characters like in Broken Arrow or Face Off or even Pulp Fiction. You know, that sort of wry smile to it. He did seem a little bit pained and a little bit more serious. It was interesting to see him with the goatee and the shaved head. He actually looked, especially with the little scarf. I've been referring to him as Haji Travolta. Really did look
there is a term for this look. I was reading it behind the scenes.
Haji Chic?
They call it mercenary chic.
Mercenary chic. There you go.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But
scarf, the cargo pants.
Yeah.
But I mean, like,
and
after
he's
watching,
too fat to run in those chase scenes.
I thought that in the trailer. I was looking at it going, wow, he just looks chunky. And I was, I think it was the first or... When he went up against the bunch of, I'm assuming triads or, you know, along those lines, I have to give props to the director. Like, some of the action scenes were really nicely shot. He pulled back. He let you actually see the action and what was going on, as opposed to doing, as we all call it, the MTV cut, where you see inside their eyeball while they're fighting.
No, the stupid Bourne Identity handheld camera. You need a...
I refer to it as the lethal weapon cutting. It's where they're trying to make Mel Gibson look like he knows martial arts by keeping the camera so close to his hands that you just see movement.
It was really well done.
Put the camera on me. Put the camera on me.
Whoops.
Look here. No, look here. Look here.
Psycho.
I thought they did a good job. I mean, for me, a must in an action sequence, especially if a guy's got a gun, it never gets old watching somebody rip the barrel off the top of a gun. And things along those lines where, you know, one dude against six. I think they handled it quite nicely. And I like the whole badass and fish out of water combination. It's always been one of my favorites. So, like, I'll definitely see this again. And I'm going to hold off until we hit the spoiler zone.
All right, well, let me give my opinion, then we'll go into spoilers. I actually agree with Dave on this one. I saw the film a couple of weeks ago at a screening, and I was actually in the screening with David Stratton, who's a very esteemed film reviewer here in Australia for our American audience. And at the end of the film, I was actually just in front of David Stratton as we were leaving, and one of the people at the cinema said to him, "What did you think?" And he went, "Oh, no, I didn't like it." And the guy said, what out of 10? And he goes, 2? Right? So Stratton didn't like it. And all I could think in my head at that point was, really? You really didn't get the moment, you know?
But he's not an action film guy.
No, he's not. And
Margaret would have loved it.
Margaret did love it.
Margaret was there too, but I didn't hear her opinion. But the point is that I actually sat there watching it, and I had this kind of giddy little schoolboy grin on my face the entire time I was watching it, because I'm sitting there going, one of my favorite genres of film is the 80s buddy cop film, going back to Running Scared or
48 Hours.
Midnight Run, 48 Hours, etc. And you sit there and you look at these films. We don't make those sort of films anymore. We've lost the ability to make these kind of films. And Luc Besson's company has come along, and Pierre Morel has made a film that is so much like an 80s buddy film from that period of time that I found myself just going along with the ride. And I knew, and I'll state right from the beginning, I knew every step of the way what it was going to happen. There was no surprises. It was as predictable can be. I knew every little nuance. You sit there at one point, we won't say until spoilers, but at one point he's given something and I just went, that's it. You know,
yeah.
It's like, we know that's going to come back to us, you know.
Badang.
All the way through it. But all I could sit there and think was, if you go back to those 80s buddy films, it was never about the plot. It was about the relationship and the characters of those
Fuck,
two
man, go
leads.
Back and watch Tango and Cash and tell me if that makes any lick of sense in any capacity. I watched it I bought it on Blu-ray about a month ago and I was really excited, and my flatmate Susan and I, we are 80s action junkies. Like, if I had to pick one genre of films for the rest of my life to watch, 80s action films, and I would be a happy man for the rest of my life. And we watched it and we got out and we're like, wow, that was incredibly shit. But, you know, it's still...
And Tango and Cash is, to be fair, Tango and Cash is actually a really bad
film. Bullets the plan, I love this.
But the point is that I found myself having a great time watching this film. And a lot of that I have to lay at Travolta's door, because I thought Travolta was having a great time.
Can we just jump into the spoiler zone?
One second. He obviously has this tragedy in his life and so forth. I didn't see what you saw. I saw Travolta finally coming out and basically having a bit of fun after having such a bad time in his life. And this is actually something I'm talking to Katrine about this just before the show. It's the first time I've actually thought about this as to why I think the Charlie Wax character works for me. Mm. And I'm not saying it's going to work for everybody, but why it works for me and why taking a Pelham 1-2-3 or Swordfish don't work for me so well. I love Swordfish. The film. No, I love Swordfish. And I thought Travolta was fun in Swordfish. I think Charlie Wax is more successful as a character. And I think the bottom line is Travolta doesn't do bad guy well, because he isn't, at his core, a bad guy. He's got that twinkle in his eye. He's got that nice feeling that comes from Travolta.
He's Vinnie Barbarino.
I
disagree.
Anyway, the point is this, that he's playing with Wax pretty much exactly the same character he played in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 or in Swordfish. But because he's a good guy in this, he's got all that outrageousness going, but we have that sense of charm, that sense of fun that's going along with him. Whereas in the other films, I never fully bought him. And this is one of my biggest criticisms about Taking a Pelham 1-2-3. He was fun to watch. He was a psychomaniac. But I didn't buy him. I didn't buy him as a character.
Mm.
I bought him as Charlie Wax. And I think there is that sense that I don't see him as a bad guy. And so I have problems with him. And even in Swordfish, I felt Swordfish, as much as I loved the film, and I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought he was a lot of fun, the bottom line was he was a caricature. He wasn't a real character.
You see, they're my favorite characters. I like massive bad guy caricatures and the anti-hero at the same time, which is why I like Travolta as an actor. Because, look, to be honest, he's not a brilliant actor. I'm sorry, that's just my opinion. I don't think he's talented in it. Like, he's not supremely
talented. He's shown
talented.
Signs of it, though. I mean, his performance in Saturday Night Fever back in the 70s was awesome.
Come on, guys. Jeez.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a lot to be said for that performance. The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. There you go.
Too young. You wouldn't know about that.
No, he's
I'm not
he's
that
a,
young.
He's not that young. He's
a whippersnapper. Are we in spoiler zones?
We're going to hit spoiler zones now. Before we hit spoilers, would you recommend it to a friend?
I'd say if you're bored on a Saturday night, wait till it's on DVD.
Okay, would you recommend to a friend?
If you're bored on a Saturday night, go and see it at the cinema.
And I would actually say that if you are willing to disengage your brain, have some fun, and just allow the film to entertain you, absolutely.
It's a popcorn flick. Absolutely. It really is a great
popcorn
flick.
And I would also amend that by saying if you are looking for anything with depth, steer far, far away. Right? Because it's not the film for you, all right? This is a film that you go just to relax and enjoy. Okay, let's hit a quick spoiler zone just to talk a few moments. If you haven't seen the film and you don't want to hear spoilers, really, there isn't that much to spoil here. It's a very predictable film. But if you don't want to hear any spoilers, time to go. But if you do want to hear spoilers, we're going to go for about another 10 minutes on spoilers, and then we're going to wrap up. So, Dave, what do you want to tell us?
I thought that the whole I'm going to go right to the major spoiler. The whole thing that his girlfriend was Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' girlfriend was watching him at the same time.
Oh, and what the point that I was making was when he gets the ring. And you just sit there and go, oh, come on, that ring has got to be... That's got to be...
Don't forget the ring. He's the ring. He's the ring. I'm giving it to you. He's the ring
like
now.
They projected. Let's have the close-up so of it
going
hard.
On.
You just like... there was never a moment like you. I was sitting there like, oh, my God, are you serious?
That's like the big reveal when Travolta at the dinner table pulls out and shoots the friend. You sit there and go, I'm just surprised it took so long.
Can I say the most important part about that scene when he shoots the Pakistani girlfriend of Caroline, the double spy, was... She answers the phone and says, there's no one here by that name, Rose, which was the key word for all the Pakistani terrorists. How's Americans say terrorist?
Terrorist.
No, they go terrorist. It's like they run it together. It's just not terrorist.
It depends on where.
Terrorist.
It depends on where you're from in America.
Right, well, terrorist. The terrorist cell. Anyway, he said the word Rose was all on the Pakistani people's phones from the terrorist cell. I'm sorry, wouldn't it be a word in Pakistani? Why are they going to pick Rose? Come on, work with me here.
I think she should have been, like, when she walked in the room, she should have had, like, the, I don't know what the name of the traditional costume is, but, you know, she should have just had the little ninja eye slot and be wearing a big, you know.
I can't think of the word.
Carpet all over herself.
That thing.
The sari or whatever they call it. I can't remember the name of it. But, you know, it was that obvious that she might as well have had tattooed on her forehead terrorist. So, you know, with a target in the middle and just, you know, like a little dot.
Then everything was just so... And then, of course, you know, she had the gun stuck underneath the, you know, the tall boy.
Yeah, what happened if you dropped a 20-cent coin there? Oh, let me just go and pick this. Oh, snap, where'd this gun come from? This is peculiar.
But you know what?
I'm just going to make the chat room because they're complaining. So keep talking amongst yourselves for a second.
I'm just going to say... I don't pull the feminist card much, but what made me laugh the most about when he discovers that his girlfriend is in fact a spy because, I don't know, she tried to shoot him. Well, she did, really. Is that they said, well, what did you know about it? I had it checked out before we started dating. Yes, but what about a family? I didn't really ask. That's because you were being rooted. You didn't care anything about her because you were having sex from an attractive woman.
But how is that ever a bad thing?
Because that's what I'm just saying. The male psyche got him in trouble.
That's how I want to die, seriously. Getting shot by a hot French agent. The honeypot. I don't care. You know, I would happily have that on my tombstone. Shot during coitus by a hot French
agent.
But
you know what was
that
gorgeous line when the wax character says to him, you know, well, a lot of this film could end up on YouTube. I hope you got some good moves.
Look, I thought the action was really, really well shot, even though, you know, some of it was fantastically ridiculous.
Can you explain to me, you know, when the bomb was underneath James's car and he wanted to go and wipe it down for prints and stuff, and then he just rammed into it and it blew up?
Yeah.
What was that, a bomb that was already in position?
When they came out of the building, he said they've probably rigged your car.
Oh, is that what that was about?
Because he said that by now they've probably already rigged your car because they know who you are, because there's an insider. And so he knew that bomb was there. If he'd gone back to his car to get into it, it would have blown up.
Yeah. But so, I just thought, I didn't know if it was, because you know he had the boot of power, because he had like a thing that you like made it, and guns were there.
I need one
there.
Of those.
But you know what was so funny? Like when he put in the code, he only got like, you know, one gun.
When Wax puts in the code.
Yeah, it had a break, you know, breaking glass in case of emergency was like the one gun, and then the number plates and the screwdriver, and then Charlie Wax's code, and it opened up, and it was like the scene out of Men in Black 2. With all the guns.
I have to say my favourite scene in the film, I think, has to be the explosive vest. Where Wax is actually saying to him, how long will it take them to get down to the street?
Yeah.
He's setting the timer, and he basically times it so that he just drops the vest at that moment. That moment was wonderful, and I also... I loved the shootout up the stairs, the spiral staircase, when he says...
No, that annoyed me when they were bonking onto the...
I thought that was funny when he says, stay behind to make sure there's nobody comes up from behind us. And as he's going up the stairs, bodies are just falling from above.
I love the Chinese restaurant where he just grabs this poor little fucking innocent waiter who's just they're just having a discussion on the origination of
Egg Foo Young.
Egg Foo Young and where egg rolls came from and all of that. And then he just grabs this waiter and uses him as Kevlar throughout an entire fight, which was
just
great.
But yes, with a twisty scarf. And I thought, if this guy lives, he's going to need to see the physio. And he's going to have a very sore neck.
You've got to stop thinking medically when you watch these movies.
Mate, that's why I can't watch Funniest Home Videos. I go, torn rotator cuff, knee.
Best line of the film is actually spoiled in the trailer, unfortunately, which is where he shoots up the entire Chinese restaurant and he says, how many more are there? And he goes, last census, about 1 billion.
I love that. can we just say two more things? So I just want to talk back about, you know, you were saying that there were moments. The big thing with acting is, as you say, it's not just what's happening in the scene and when the mouth's working. It's two things. It's when they're responding to what the other actor's saying, they're listening. And the second thing is what's happening behind the eyes. And it was like, the energy was up, and then it'd just flat. That, to me, was what was happening in terms of the sadness. Mm. But it did work in the scenes after the
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Thank you. When he discovered the girlfriend was a traitor, whatever, that he actually said, I've been there before. It was the same chick. It was in Beirut. It was here. It was there. Mm. That worked for him in terms of that background sorrow. But really, you know, I thought he didn't have the joie de vie in, as we say, the nutbaggery you need for a character like that. And secondly, when Rhys thingy was floating around the apartment and it's all been pulled apart by the spies to look for the mics and the bugs, you know, he's going, this doesn't feel right. And he's like walking around, and as Mirren would say, playing the problem, I'm depressed. Think,
well,
oh,
actually,
for
it's
God's
funny,
sake.
I haven't actually seen a lot of Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' films. He was very good in, was it Atonement? Was that the one that he
no.
was?
No.
Was it, which one was he in that he got all the acclaim for? He was
I'll IMDb him now, because I haven't seen him.
Wasn't he in that tennis
much,
one? The tennis one?
Yeah, Match Point, I think he was.
He was in Match Point.
Somebody look him up for me, because there was actually one film that, yeah, he was in Match Point, that's right, but that wasn't it. There was one film where he was really, he captured everybody's imagination.
I know, and that was ages ago.
And it was, anyway, and the thing is, I've never been a big fan of him, and in this, I actually think he's so weak compared to John Travolta.
But the other thing that annoyed me in terms of pacing...
Oh, he was in Mission Impossible 3, too. Match Point, Alexander... I can't see anything that...
Alexander,
the Oliver Stone film.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, so that was the first
the
point...
The film that can't decide on the cut.
So that's the first point, was about, you know, his weakness as a... and his lack of, you know, being in the moment. And secondly, when he's washing the blood off his face, and cops are coming up the steps... I thought, come on.
Hmm.
You know, that to me was like a weird break. It didn't feel
where
he would have collected his thoughts.
Structurally, the film wasn't as solid as it could be. But once again, it's because they're going for this joyous fun of just being this outrageous balls-to-the-wall action film. I don't think they were actually thinking too much about people actually were going to be. There was actually an interesting observation on Slash Filmcast, which I listened to a couple weeks ago when they reviewed this. And they actually said that something about this film caught their attention. It almost feels like the French were making fun of the Americans.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's because it's all French filmmakers and it's shot in France and everything else, even though it's in English, it almost feels like they're looking at the stereotypes of America and going, jab, jab, jab.
Oh, come on, man. There was no reason why she had to be a fucking terrorist. And, like, out of nowhere, they just throw in, you know, Pakistanis, and they throw in an Arab in a station.
Sorry, I made
wagon.
A list. Can I make a list? You know, Asians, just... Arabics, and Pakistanis. They were the major list.
Didn't
people.
Know what you just said?
No, because I
didn't
Arabic.
Say Asian.
You didn't say
okay.
Asians.
But, you know, it was just hilarious that they just went right there, like, head first into it. Because at the beginning I was thinking it was all going to be triads and, you know...
I thought it was
going to
be drugs
some,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of drugs, there was a great scene in the restaurant where he's trying to find the cocaine. So what does he do is they're like, we've hidden it, we're not telling you. And he just shoots the roof where I thought MSG was going to come out. But, actually,
and they all got a headache.
Yes, that's right. But actually, it's just raining cocaine. And one of them just grabs, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers grabs a vase and just is holding it. And it's like, it was like one of the slushy machines. It's just like, let me just fill this up with cocaine for you before the movie. And then he's just walking around and they have that little training day moment in the car where he's just like, you better have some cocaine, boy. You better get some cocaine. And then... And I'm sorry, I told Dave I probably wouldn't say this on the show, but I am going to.
We do not condone the use of drugs on this
yeah.
show.
All I'm going to say is anyone who may have or may not have tried cocaine, these are not the effects of cocaine in the movie. It was not like he took LSD or something like that, yeah. You know? It's like all that would have happened is his heart rate would have gone up and he'd be a little bit fucking talkative and that's it. So I just thought that was quite hilarious where you just see him totally wigging out over it and I was like, really? Wow.
The other thing is that the girlfriend's backstory was so weak. 6 years ago, I met a man that gave me a reason for living. You know, come on, what? He gave you a copy of the Quran? Like, what are you? Like, I don't know what she became. What was she following? She suddenly, was she upset about the imperious, what is it, capital imperious dogs of the West? Like, what was the deal?
Infidels.
Like, you know, her backstory was so weak. I thought, I don't care that you're going to be a suicide bomber. Why?
I think it's a part of what Dave was saying, which I hadn't really thought of until he mentioned it. The whole caricature of America where they were just like, there is no backstory. They're just, if we let her do this, the terrorists win. Like, all I was waiting for was before she hit her chest at the end, I was waiting for her to go, and then just do that. And
but
that
I'm sorry, to me, you know, if you wanted to be bad, like, would the American government care about the African nationals that were coming? Like, you know, why were they all going over there? They just say, come to us.
And a small point of when she's hidden in the room with like 16 other people in the
she's
same
got the orange high
sari,
heels.
And all she needed to do is like, he's like, Caroline. She could have been like, yeah.
Exactly. Boom. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But you know, it's like, no, we're going to talk you down for 15 minutes.
And the fact that no one else shot her in the head.
Well, and the other thing that was completely implausible about this entire last scene as well, of course, was the fact that the American politician woman.
Oh, she was a bitch. I wanted her to blow up.
No, I wanted her to be the girl that the Wax character had bonked in the other things. That's what I thought he was going to say. Hello, Santa.
But it was just so completely improbable that if there was a bomb threat on that building, that woman would have been taken so far away that she wouldn't have been able to see the flash. You know,
and not only that, but
the Secret Service actually does that. They don't take her there, and then they say, oh, we have to wait out here for a minute because there could be threat of a bomb inside. They would say, get her out of here, you know?
But in fact, she could say, no, keep going on the road.
Exactly. They would have been like, you know what, sweetheart, that's lovely, but we're going over here. And the whole fact that they've driven like 3 meters ahead of them, a car has just blown up. They get to the embassy, and she's in the car like, oh my God, I can't believe I had to wait here for like 45 minutes while you guys are just doing that. What's going on? Like,
I love that voice you do.
Somebody is losing their job over there. It's like, really? And I was waiting for Wax to come in and go, bitch! And that's it.
No, it had to be the woman he'd had the affair with.
But it was also the, what I loved was his unnatural love affair with his gun. Mrs. Jones. Which was my favorite line in the film, which was just, he's holding it and he's like, till death do us part. And I was just like, that is the cheesiest.
No, but when he did the Mrs. Jones line and sunk. And, you know, I think he should have pushed it harder. When he was in the car with that other driver that was a good driver, you know, the one that was his little fast driving man. And
he was awesome. It should have been Clive Owen.
It should have been the guy from Transporter. He should have been the driver.
Jason Statham.
Yay!
Oh, I would have paid
Jason
extra
Statham
for
the win.
Thank you. So anyway, the bottom line was, and when that song came on, which was, was a Carpenter's song, and he starts singing away, and the guy looks at him and he goes, you know, don't say anything, and he's smiling. He should have just then gone back into Kill 'Em All. Don't say anything. You know, that would have been better to me.
Should have just shot him in the head right there.
Well,
and
he was
then
his fast driving
wheel.
Man. There was one more thing I had to say. I know I'm dribbling on. So to me, the scene that said, oh, yes, these guys now have camaraderie, both of them been done over by a evil double-dealing bitch spy. And then he comes out, comes the cheese royale. Can you say Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, I was actually, that was the one, probably the one thing in this film that I actually really objected to.
The use of
the royale with cheese.
Somebody forgot to put their phone on.
Somebody who actually, the use of the royale with cheese, I just went, no.
Oh, dude, it was terrible.
That doesn't work for me. That's not an homage. That's just silly.
What's that noise?
Hello.
Oh, anyway, the last thing I was going to say was, so the final scene, in terms of spoilers, was they played chess out front of the plane. Wax has said, come with me. He says, I've got some things to sort out, blah, blah. And it's like, can you say sequel?
I hope so.
I actually don't want to bring back the Jonathan Rhys-Meyers character, but I would actually like to see another film. I'd like to revisit the Charlie Wax character.
No, I'd like to see Rhys-Meyers with, you know, testicles.
Yeah, I was about to say that, testicles.
It would
yes.
be really nice to see him, you know, because, I don't think the guy is supremely talented. Neither of them were, but I think that, I don't know, I enjoy the whole, You know, it's like Nicolas Cage with Sean Connery in The Rock. It's that, you know, hard ass and tech guy. Mm. I love that sort of balance because it always ends up being that towards the end, the tech guy becomes a bit more of a hard ass. And I like seeing
that.
But maybe
then also
it's
his use of
nerdy.
Language and stuff like the fact that he was multilingual and blah, blah, blah. I think Wax could see a value, you know, you could see a potential storyline where they're dropped in some other hotspot. And
I'd like to see them just do, like, now, you know, no chicks involved, full hardcore action. I mean, like, the thing I loved about Wax was, you know, it's like, well, we've got this cocaine because we're going to need it eventually. And he's like, well, I'm going to enjoy it. It's like, well, I need this hooker for my cover. And, well, I paid for a hooker. I'm going to take her into a room closet and fuck her. And I like that. It's the same thing as, like, when you have in True Lies or something, a guy storming a battleground and he shoots 50. He's got, like, a pistol. He shoots 50 guys with AKs. And in classic movies, he just keeps running around with a pistol, and it shits me to tears. And it was what I loved in True Lies. Arnie runs up and he, you know, picks up the AK and then picks up another one and another
one. Yes, I liked him picking up things as
And you could see John Travolta was doing that throughout this movie, like the mannequin scene, which was so ridiculous, but fuck, I didn't care, man.
No,
he was running around, he's got two MP5s.
What was the snowy stuff coming down?
It was all the fibre and shit coming away from all the bullets.
When they were shooting up the mannequins. Okay, because it seemed like... And then it wasn't in another part.
Because there was mannequins and there was polystyrene and there was all the various bits and pieces that were in that factory. So as he's ripping shots at, it's just causing fluff and disaster everywhere. Which is,
so
of course,
later on
probably,
he's going to get asbestosis of the lung.
Probably.
If he lives that
and
long.
And that's how he dies in the third film.
That's right. He dies quietly in a hospital.
Shoots the bad guy and then afterwards, my heart. Oh.
No, then he makes the James character give him a double lung transplant. That's why it keeps him.
It becomes Repo Men then, because Jude Law comes and cuts it out of him.
Okay, on that, I think we've actually reached the end of the spoiler. So I think we've just about run out of things to talk about on this.
Well,
film.
The battery ran out on my Mac, so I have nothing more to say.
We also have to go because our chat room is having a heart attack because the stream has gone all slow and weird.
Oh, sorry, chat room.
So we will get ourselves out of here. We've got a little bit of housekeeping to take care of. First of all, from Paris with Love, just a quick summary. Dave and I both say it's enjoyable nonsense. Go have a look.
It's the greatest movie of all time.
It's enjoyable nonsense. Wait for it to come on DVD.
And Katrina thinks wait for DVD. It is nonsense. Okay, all right, so if you agree or disagree with anything that we said on this show, if you want to give your opinions on any films, or if you have any requests for the show, send your information to feedback@geekactually.com. And we actually did receive a request this week from our friend Popshot in the chat room, who basically said, what are our opinions of the film MASH, the classic Robert
Altman
film. Yeah.
Wow.
So I think we will do a retro review on that in the next couple of weeks because it is a classic film to talk about. So yes, your request has been heard and is being processed. you can send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can send a voicemail, or leave a voicemail is the correct grammar, I would imagine, at city number 02-801-13167. Make sure you just specify which show the voicemail is for. We have three different shows. And keep it short and to the point, please. We do have a fan page. You can fan us and follow us along at facebook.com/geekactually. We also have merchandise that you can buy, which I'm not wearing today. I'm a bit slack, but we have t-shirts and bags.
You're wearing the underpants, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm wearing the G-string.
I'm wearing it backwards.
So your face is at front.
Mm.
And you can find all that wonderful merchandise both for this show and for our platform show at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. Now, we've received a couple more, but we're still looking for more people to take our survey if possible, which is the PodTrack survey, which you can find at the geekactually.com website. Look for the link that says support us. First one on that page is to take a quick survey to help try and match us up with advertisers. So that'd be really handy if you could take that survey for us. It will only take a few minutes. A couple shout outs to our friends and other podcasts that we love and listen to. MovieFanHouse.com, the Movie Fan House podcast. Our friends Brad and Charlie, who you might be seeing, Dave.
I was actually thinking about a little side trip to Indiana, but considering the nature of things coming up in the next month or so. And
I hope you do get to meet them, though. We've talked to them on the phone. We've been on their show like a couple 2 weeks ago, and it would be really nice to meet them.
Well, it's also, I don't want to miss two episodes of Platforms in a row, because I will miss one. And if I do end up going to Indiana, I'll have to skip another one at least. And to be honest, I think I'm going to have too much work on, which kind of sucks.
From Gary, Indiana?
Maybe from F. Gary, Indiana.
Gary Gray.
Sorry, Gary, Indiana. What's this song out of The Music Man? Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So
I don't know what any of those words
Their podcast is by fans, for fans, and they've also got a wonderful website. You can check them out at moviefanhouse.com. And our good friends at The Real Junkies, which you can find at weekendronin.com or on both of these can be searched for on iTunes. Real Junkies is movie reviews fueled by tequila, and they're quite fun. And I just got to say, very quickly, for the last 3 weeks, I think it is, Fox, we miss you. Because he hasn't been on the show, and for those who listen to the show, you'll know what I mean by that. But all we can say is, Fox, we miss you.
Probably tinkering on a Black Hawk helicopter somewhere.
According to a Twitter I got, now maybe I shouldn't be saying this on air, but according to a Twitter I got, apparently he's got a new lady friend.
Now, introduce her to the wonders of the show. If she likes the show, then she's compatible with you.
Absolutely.
Or reattach your testicles. And say, woman, I'm going on the show for an hour and a half. You can live without me.
Yeah, you just say to her, excuse me, dear, can I have my balls back today? I need to go do something. All right.
I have no response to that.
Okay, good. Now, just to do a little bit of plugging for ourselves. Dave, tell us a little bit about Platforms.
Platforms is quite possibly, with the exception of this and Geek Actually Text, Tech is quite possibly the greatest podcast in the history of mankind. I'm going out on a limb in saying that, but I truly do believe that. It is a wonderful show with Beardy McBeardison, myself, and the not pictured today Joshua Philpott, and it covers everything video games, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. We have quite the interactive chat room. Gets a little
busy. It does. The chat room gets really, really busy on that.
They do get rowdy, and look, if you like video games, you don't have to be a fanatic. If you're just a casual gamer or even have a little interest in gaming. Everything
from Pac-Man through to Left 4 Dead 2.
Yes, wow. I'm impressed.
That's the only two I know.
That covers a broad spectrum. That's a big range. But we have a bit of a chat. It's like this. I will say though, it's a little bluer than the Geek Actually Show.
A lot bluer.
and I would say that 90% of that is due to me letting.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Is it next week you're not going to be on?
No, I'll be on Monday. I'll be here, but the Monday after.
The following. It'll be very interesting to see if Josh can live up to the blueness without you.
Well, especially because I think Job from Game Arena is going to come in, and Job is pretty much like me. He's pretty wild. And, pardon me, I am going to see, depending on when I land in San Francisco, I may Skype in for the show, if that's possible.
Well, yeah,
so.
Anything is possible. All right, so if you want to catch up with the Platforms podcast and you do like a little bit of video gaming nonsense, because it is, let me tell you, it's fun stuff. They go crazy on that show. You can catch that at geekactually.com/platforms every Monday, 8 p.m. for the live show, or you can search for it on iTunes.
I kind of forgot all that stuff. I'm glad you're
on the ball. I'm on the ball. It's all right. Now, we also have Geek Actually Tech, which is right on my face.
you were doing a Goran from Law and Order CR.
Yeah, so I've been right over.
Hello. Sorry, this is completely irrelevant to any audio listener out there. Geek Actually Tech is our new podcast that only started 3 weeks ago. Basically, it's the tech section from this show expanded out to an hour.
And now Dave's looking like a tech head.
Basically, Josh and Shane and I look at the week's worth of tech, and we pick one major topic, and we kind of rip through that major topic.
In a very, very soft-spoken version.
And a very soft-spoken show. And it's actually doesn't carry an explicit tag, so it's kind of odd compared to the rest of our shows. But
yeah, you know, I'd say that's because I don't star on that show.
I don't think I've said a rude word today.
I have.
I know.
So I haven't sworn once.
Really?
No. Pretty fucking sure.
So if you want to get your weekly dose of tech, come along to geekactually.com/live. It's on the same channel as the Geek Actually Show. And once again, you can also find that on iTunes. Now, we go out live on that show Wednesdays at 8 p.m. So if you want to watch the show and join us, you're more than welcome to. Now, as customary on this show, just for personal plugs, is there anything you guys personally want to plug? How do we find you guys on the internet? Dave?
Oh, you can find me writing for Telstra's Game Arena website. I have reviews up there now. I write for Official PlayStation Magazine, Australian Penthouse, and on their website. And at my blog, which is Feel the Awesome, with a hyphen between each one.
That's such a great URL.
At Blogspot. And I haven't updated it for quite a while. I've been getting a lot of shit from Brett and other guys. We want to read your stuff. I was like, man, I got like 500 to 1,000 articles to upload. It takes a little bit of time when I'm not, you know, writing and doing all this other stuff.
Fair enough.
But yes, you can find me there and, of course, on the Geek Actually Podcast Network.
platforms in particular. And Katrina, is there anything... Where are you?
I'm hiding as well. I'm goring the other way.
Is there anything you want to plug or push?
Well, no, except I'm in the middle of writing a screenplay at the moment for a black comedy, and I'm quite excited about it.
Is it like Friday, that sort of black comedy, or you mean...
Or is it black as in tone black?
Tone black, and it's funny, and people are dying.
So it's not literal black?
No.
Dying from laughter?
You're on fire. Yes, so that's what I'm working on.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry I was off shot there.
That's all right. We're finishing up here anyway. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh or facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh, or you can find me at geekactually.com because that's where I hang out. Is that all?
Yeah.
All right, everybody out there, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered at the movies. And we will see you all next week. We'll be right back.